It's Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. State lawmakers are considering a number of bills that would reinstate and expand the use of the death penalty in New Hampshire. Joining me now to discuss is NHPR's senior political reporter, Josh Rogers. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Rick.
Josh, lawmakers repealed the death penalty here in 2019. I'm sure you remember. No person has been executed here since 1939. So where is this effort to bring it back coming from?
I think there's several factors. President Trump's embrace of capital punishment is one. I think Governor Kellyanne's support for the death penalty, at least the version that was on the books here before it was outlawed, is certainly another. And it's also no coincidence that all of the bills being considered by lawmakers to restore or expand capital punishment are sponsored by Republicans. And, you know, over the last decade, there has been action in other GOP-led states to expand the use of the death penalty, including enacting laws to allow capital punishment as a penalty for crimes not involving death, which the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled is disproportionate. State laws where the death penalty would be applied to some sex crimes against children. Two bills under the discussion would do that here, and they've not been directly ruled on by the Supreme Court, but that could be on the table if these laws were passed.
So it's kind of a combination of local politics and national trends.
Yes, I think so. And go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say people gathering at the State House were giving testimony over the week on these bills. And, who was there? What did they have to say?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of the people that turned out predominantly opponents. I mean, there were really very few supporters who turned out, basically the sponsors of the bills. And those people made the case that death is warranted for the worst sorts of crimes. Some people are, that's what they deserve. And opponents made varied arguments against return to capital punishment here in New Hampshire. A big one was that the state shouldn't be involved in killing people. There are the familiar moral arguments that killing people, compounds suffering and trauma more than achieve justice. And they noted that sometimes that people are wrongly convicted. A man testified who had been convicted in Florida, spent years and years on death row before being exonerated by DNA evidence. And he talked about how this process robbed much of his life from him. And there were also victims of violence, people whose family members had been murdered who told lawmakers they didn't want violence done on their behalf. And there were plenty of financial arguments. The legal costs in pursuing capital cases is vast. And, the state is often paying the legal bills for both the prosecution and defendants who are often indigent. So lots of arguments and, plenty of them, frankly, were quite familiar from when New Hampshire repealed the law 7 years ago. And as you remember, that was over the veto of then-Governor Chris Sununu.
Yeah, right. Now, would you say that the sentiment overwhelmingly was against?
Well, it's certainly in the room. And, polling would indicate that the death penalty is not terribly popular in New Hampshire or nationally. The support for it has dropped a good deal. But, it's definitely too soon to say where these debates are going. Governor Ayotte's role could be pivotal. It's important to note that she led the prosecution of Michael Addison, who's killed Manchester police officer Michael Briggs in 2006. He's the lone death row inmate in New Hampshire. And, when the state repealed the death penalty back in 2019, then private citizen Kelly Ayotte, who had been in the U.S. Senate, out of the U.S. Senate, this was really at her, she was really well out of public life at this point. She turned up to the State House to testify against its repeal. And law enforcement is a policy area where she's probably been most emphatic as governor, and she has said that she wants capital punishment back on the books. She's stopped short of endorsing any of the bills that would do that yet. At the time when she said, made these comments, these bills hadn't been issued. She said she hadn't read them. It's far from clear any of these can get through the legislature, but a lot of people are certainly paying attention to what Governor Ayotte chooses to do during this debate.
Okay, we'll be watching for reporting on that, Josh. Well, the legislative session, of course, just starting
it
up.
Did.
Yeah. What are some of the other items that you've been keeping an eye on this time around?
Well, one theme I'm watching, and this is going to express itself in a number of areas, is the interrelation and tension between state and local government. Last week in its first meeting of the year, the House voted down a bill that would have imposed mandatory spending caps on local governments. That issue is going to come back. But this tension is really shot through a number of the bills that lawmakers are going to be debating. And it speaks to the broader strain between state and local governments and school districts over autonomy and financial responsibility to pay for services in schools and the accountability for the money that the state provides municipalities as cost continues to rise. And, you know, the state's highest court continues to rule that the state hasn't yet met its obligation to provide an adequate education that's guaranteed by the New Hampshire Constitution.
But the court has not given a deadline for the legislature to do anything necessarily about it, correct?
No, and that's you know, that's the tension of the multi-branches of government.
Yeah. New Hampshire Congresswoman Maggie Goodlander says she's under review for her appearance in a video urging members of the military to resist illegal orders. You remember that from back in November.
Yes.
Josh, what do we know about what's happening now? Goodlander was in the news this week.
Well, Goodlander and others in the video said that they were remain under review or investigation by the Department of Justice. You know, this video, which was shot, all of the members of Congress who were in it had some background in the military. Goodlander was in the Navy Reserve or in intelligence, and they, you know, told service people that they didn't have to follow illegal orders. This came during the ramp up of strikes on Venezuelan drug boats in the Caribbean, and also the deployment of National Guard troops in cities. So that was back in November. Goodlander said this week, as did others in Congress, that they were under investigation. Goodlander called the situation sad and telling and dangerous that the DOJ would target her. And, you know, you recall President Trump made social media posts where he called this behavior treasonous and said punishable by death. You know, the new developments, we don't really know much in detail. You know, Maggie Goodlander says she sought more clarity from the Department of Justice. She served in the DOJ during the Biden administration. You know, another lawmaker in the video, Michigan Senator Alisa Slotkin, has said that Jeanine Pirro, who's a U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, is pursuing the probe. That's kind of where we are.
We don't know exactly what that probe means. We do know it's Senator Mark Kelly, who is also in that video. He has also been very outspoken about what's going on with him. They're trying to demote him and so on. But we'll have to watch what happens here with Congresswoman Maggie Goodlander. NHPR's senior political reporter Josh Rogers, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, protests have erupted in Minneapolis and across the country this week in opposition to tactics used by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Joining us now to talk about what ICE activity looks like here in New England and in New Hampshire specifically is the Boston Globe's Stephen Porter. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, hello.
Stephen, you reported this week that the number of state and local enforcement agencies looking to carry out federal immigration arrests in the state has grown. How is local law enforcement cooperating with ICE?
So there are now 13 state and local law enforcement agencies in New Hampshire that have signed task force model agreements with ICE. This is under Section 287G of the Immigration and Nationality Act. And these agreements allow local police to interrogate people about their immigration status and make arrests when someone is accused of breaking immigration law, even in situations when there isn't a crime that's been committed. So some of these agencies in New Hampshire have yet to make a single arrest. The 13th Police Department that signed on in Auburn just signed their ICE agreement last week. So none of their officers have gone through the training and certification process to actually begin making immigration arrests. The Auburn police chief, by the way, told me that he doesn't expect his officers to be arresting very many people on ICE's behalf. He said his goal is to just make sure that his team is trained and equipped and ready to lend a hand to their federal partners. But there are other police departments in New Hampshire that have been making arrests on ICE's behalf. The police in Troy, New Hampshire, for example, have made at least a dozen such arrests since last December. Most of those were from traffic stops in Troy, but a couple were targeted operations where the Troy police chief left his town and went to Keene, where he arrested people at the local courthouse. The Keene Sentinel had some good reporting on the jurisdictional debate over that. All of that said, there are still some details that we don't yet know about how exactly these ICE cooperation agreements are being implemented. I myself have records requests pending with multiple agencies.
I know the ACLU of New Hampshire, too, seeking more information about how the agencies are enforcing the Fed's immigrant program. But what are they hoping to find?
Yeah, so the ACLU of New Hampshire filed a lawsuit yesterday under the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA. They are looking for the training materials that ICE has been using to bring local police up to speed on things like the relevant immigration law, use of force policies, and best practices for taking people into custody. Obviously, the ACLU is arguing that ICE has an obligation under FOIA to produce these records, but their lawsuit also lays out kind of a broader argument for why this information should be public, in their view. Their lawsuit says some of the arrests that local police in New Hampshire have carried out in recent months on ICE's behalf raise questions about their training, especially when it comes to questions around establishing reasonable suspicion that someone may lack legal permission to be in the United States. Remember, the ICE task force model that we're talking about here was reestablished last year by the Trump administration. The program had been suspended since 2012 amid concerns about racial profiling. So I think at least part of what the ACLU's lawsuit is looking for is information that could reveal whether and how ICE may be providing sound guidance and reasonable guardrails for local police to avoid some of the problems we saw when this program was active more than a decade ago.
And more broadly, what kind of activity have you seen from ICE? I know that, the mayor of Boston, for instance, is talking about a possible surge of ICE agents in that city. I know that the governor of Maine has also, released a proclamation about her preparations for a possible surge there. What are we seeing here in New Hampshire as far as ICE itself and possible surge of agents here? Or is their model really just trying to work with local enforcement?
Well, we have certainly seen federal agents, whether they are ICE agents or other federal agents working with ICE, carry out individual enforcement actions here in New Hampshire. It is difficult to keep a close tab on what exactly they're doing. But I think that perhaps the biggest development that we've seen here in New Hampshire this week is really that we have a better idea now of which warehouse facility in Merrimack might be under consideration by ICE to detain and process hundreds of people at a time. My colleague Amanda Gokey reached out to ICE to ask about that particular facility, and ICE didn't confirm or deny that we had the right place, but they did acknowledge that they are actively working to expand detention space. And we also know that local police are keeping an eye on that potential facility in light of all the attention and protests.
And I know town officials and state officials both have said they have no word necessarily on that facility in Merrimack. Is that true?
Yeah, Governor Ayotte was asked about the potential ICE site in Merrimack last week, and she said as of last week she hadn't gotten any information from the federal government about it. She called the Washington Post report speculative and suggested there could be challenges related to staffing. Now that we have a particular warehouse that we're looking into, we haven't heard an update from her yet, so we'll be keeping an eye and an ear out for that. I think the bottom line is that things might still be in flux.
The Boston Globe's Stephen Porter. Stephen, thanks so much for the time this morning.
Thank you.
You can find more of his work, by the way, at bostonglobe.com/New Hampshire. We're here next Friday with more top headlines, as always. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.